Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
You watch the movies, slash flicks, slash tracks for the good, slash bad, it's the slash film cast, for the girls, slash boys, slash old, slash young, yeah, we watch till the last of the credits is done.
Hello everyone and welcome to the slash film cast. I'm David Chen and with me are
Devendra Hardwar
and Jeff Cannata.
Welcome to the show, everyone. What we're going to do here on the podcast this week, which we're recording a little bit earlier than usual, super earlier than usual, it's like 6:45 a.m. right now, is we're going to be discussing... Woo! What we're going to be doing on the show this week is we're going to be discussing a couple of your emails, moving on into some what we've been watching this week, and then concluding with an in-depth review. This week, we'll be reviewing the new J.C. Shandor movie, Triple Frontier, which just debuted on Netflix a couple days ago. So looking forward to talking about that with you guys. But before we get into any of that, let's talk about some of the emails we've been getting the last couple weeks. So I'm going to spoil Avengers Infinity War. So just like, if you haven't seen Avengers Infinity War, skip forward, whatever. You should probably watch it. A lot of people talking about what's going on with that movie. But I am going to respect that if you haven't seen it and you want to skip ahead, that's fine. So in our review of Captain Marvel last week, I made a salty remark about how Thanos had gotten all the Infinity Stones in the course of 1 week, and how I found that to be pretty unbelievable, because like, he's been going after the Infinity
Stones. It's been 1 week since I got a stone.
Wow. It's okay though. We got many emails from people. Basically, people trying to explain to me why it would be that Thanos waited so long to do all the Infinity Stones in 1 week. And so many different explanations of why that's the case. There's one explanation that I actually found to be that I was most sympathetic to. And that was the explanation that he needed the ingredients for the Soul Stone obtaining to be in place before he launched his mission. Because he's obviously going to attract a lot of attention when he's going
after
those.
Yeah, you don't want to start collecting stones and showing everybody that you're a stone collector before you know where all the stones are. You got to bide your time. You got to sit on that weird space throne and just hang out and let a lot of other movies happen first.
It's like an Ocean's 11 heist, just to do it all at the end or something.
Yeah, you know. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, thanks for all the emails explaining why Thanos waited so long to get the stones. I actually appreciate the emails because it shows people still care and are still listening to the show. So there were many of them, but appreciate all the varied explanations for that plot. Not whole. I mean, it's a plot mechanic, plot function.
Look what happened to the collector. You know, he comes out hard as wanting a stone. Things turn out bad for him.
They did turn out pretty badly for him. Yeah, agreed. Okay, and also got an email in response to our Shoplifters review from a couple weeks ago. This email comes in from Connor from Des Moines, Iowa, who writes in to slashfilmcast@gmail.com. quote, I really enjoyed your review of Shoplifters, and especially your choice of Shoplifters over Greta. I had a quick point to make regarding Japanese movies about the urban poor. Director Sion Sono has made many movies about this. Love Exposure has supporting characters that are actually shoplifters, although the main characters are middle class. Himitsu, also Themis, centers around two destitute characters I believe live in a suburb. Guilty of Romance deals with poor people forced into prostitution. Hair Extensions deals with child abuse. And Tokyo Tribe deals with a futuristic urban poor. Although his films can be bonkers and insane and effing awesome, they also deal with the realities of everyday Japanese people. Just thought I'd mention that since it was brought up in the discussion. Cool. So Sion Sono is the director.
Mm-hmm.
And some names of films there that deal with the urban poor that you that we talked about during that review of Shoplifters. So,
good call, great director, and also bonkers guy. Like I've talked about some of his films; they're insane.
All right. Well, thanks for the recommendation, Connor from Des Moines. And you can always write into us at /filmcast@gmail.com if you have a response to any of our shows. So let's dive into what we've been watching, gentlemen.
I'm really looking forward to this one, Dave. Just imagine you in the theater watching this movie. Go for it.
Okay, so I had a chance to see Gaspar Noé's newest film, Climax. Have you heard of this new movie, Climax, by Gaspar Noé?
Uh-huh. Big musical, I hear. Yeah. It's the feel-good musical of the year, is what I understand.
It's like, it's like a Mary Poppins redo, right?
Yeah, it's certainly the same rating as the Mary Poppins. It's certainly the same level of maturity as Mary Poppins required to be in the theater.
You're so good.
You like this?
I'm so happy. I couldn't be happier.
Truc qui monte.
Qu'est-ce que t'as? Tu sais garder un secret,
secret, secret, secret.
Gaspar Noé is a provocateur and who in my opinion is a brilliant filmmaker, right? He made he's only made a few films. I Stand Alone debuted in 1998, Irreversible in 2002, Enter the Void in 2009, Love which is on Netflix right now, I think, in 2015, mm-hmm. and now Climax. And this guy in my opinion is a straight up visionary. I mean, you know how you see trailers say, like, from the visionary director of Watchmen? This is one of those guys for whom I would be okay with that designation. I think he is he uses –
because he made Watchmen?
No. He uses film in a way to capture sensations and experiences and emotions that no one else does, like, in my opinion. No one else is better able to replicate – the feeling of being on drugs as Gaspar Noé when you're watching one of his movies. And
that's something we want.
it depends. It's certainly an acquired taste. And so I had a chance to go see Climax at the SIFF Egyptian Theater in Seattle this past week. And I thought it was a really great experience. I mean, it is basically a dance horror film. And I'll just be very vague and say, like, that's all I'll say about it, is it's a dance horror film.
Another one of those.
That old chestnut. And it uses a lot of the techniques that we've seen in earlier Noé films, specifically Enter the Void, right? Over, like, kind of the camera is kind of floating either above the action or in the action. It feels like kind of floating. It's like the camera's turning and rotating. Feels like you're kind of like almost like a ghost drifting through this space. Most of the film takes place in one location. Many of the shots are done. They last for minutes at a time and show some really brilliant and compelling choreography, like dance choreography. Apparently, the script was only a few pages long. A lot of it was improvised. But I actually thought the actors and dancers did a really good job of conveying normal reactions, natural reactions to the situation that they were in, which, again, I'm going to be extremely vague about. So I thought it was great. That being said, many people, including my wife, walked out of the film. So
wow.
Did she just leave you there?
Did like, she call an Uber?
She waited in the lobby for me. Which is
oh man,
which is not the first time she's walked out of a movie that I've been watching with her.
Was that a signal, Dave? Like watching a Gaspar Noé movie, and yeah.
Well, I'll say what she said about it, which is that the Gaspar Noé is many things. He has many talents, but one thing he is not is subtle. And I think my wife was watching this movie. She got like 30 minutes into it. And she said, "You know, I think I get the point.
Exactly.
I think I know what this guy's trying to say." And then
so
she
wait,
just,
this is what 2-hour movie?
It's like 90 minutes. 90 minutes. Yeah.
So she had an hour of the lobby time waiting for her husband to catch up to the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's like it's 1 hour and 36 minutes, and that's right. Yeah, it's like 40 minutes through after a particularly challenging scene.
Listen, there's a lot to do in the lobby. You can like read the news, play some arcade games.
She had
entertain you more than this.
Other people joined her. Other people joined her too. So
I can imagine like the first audience that saw Irreversible and that notorious rape scene. And I've seen that movie. I just cannot stomach the guy after that, basically, because it lasts for 10 minutes. It is just you see the point of it, but does it need to be that long? I don't know.
I actually still to this day have not watched that scene yet because I've heard it's so upsetting.
It's very upsetting.
But yeah. I've seen all of his other movies other than I Stand Alone. I've seen Enter the Void. I've seen Love. But this one I think is probably his least.
I have heard it's very accessible. Yeah,
it's very accessible. It's his most accessible movie. I think it treats his characters least cruelly. You know what I mean? Than all of his other movies.
Okay.
I really thought he was
progress, I guess. Like just not being cruel to your people. Like that's the thing that kind of annoys me with the especially the like European provocateur directors between him and like Lars von Trier, right? Like there's some value in what they're doing, but then I have to get over rolling my eyes over you trying to like, you know, astound the audience or gross out the audience or something.
Well, it's all in the teaser poster for Climax, which I think debuted at Cannes, I think. I don't remember when it came out, but there's a teaser poster for Climax. I'm just going to read from the teaser poster. It says, "You despised I Stand Alone. You hated Irreversible. You loathed Enter the Void. You cursed Love. Now try Climax, my new film, Gaspar Noé." Yeah. Which just kind of tells you everything about like the
attitude. It's like if Bart Simpson made a movie,
right? Except it's like I dare you to hate this. I dare you to hate this, and it's
eat
like
now try eat my yes. Sure.
Yeah. So a lot of people find that attitude to be pretty irritating, and I can completely understand that. But I try to put that all out of my mind. I try not to pay attention to that. I just watch the movie and found it very enjoyable. So the movie's Climax. I think it's already out in like home video in other parts of the world. It's out in limited release right now. I actually was so inspired after seeing this movie. I bought Enter the Void on Blu-ray just because I really enjoyed that movie as well. So
you need another hit of this.
Need another hit of that Gaspar Noé. And he. Yeah. So just a couple of closing thoughts.
When the camera pan zooms into the aborted fetus, I see the history. You know, I feel. The history of the universe in that shot.
That was pretty. That was a pretty rough scene. But
can I just dig in slightly on your marital relationship?
Yeah,
because I want to know about the moment of I'm out from your wife, who's by the way a delightful, lovely, wonderful person.
This makes me like her even more. Yes,
yes, I agree. Does she? Is there any? Feeling on your part that you should join her, that you should, or no, you've made a decision to come here tonight. you can't handle it. That's on you, is the David Chen position.
Here's one of the things that I really love about my wife, who, by the way, by the time you're listening to this, will have had our 1 year anniversary. So it'll be a year since you guys were here.
Correct.
This is
went to celebrate it.
This was a celebration. That's right. So happy anniversary. Here's one of the things I love about my wife is that it's her opinion, like her belief that we should live separate lives. You know what I mean? Like that we should, like, it's okay that our lives are separate from each other.
There's
right?
this like giant wall in your house and you have to like,
yeah, there's a big line in that we drew in the house that like you can't cross, you know? But no, there's some people who are like, oh, we're a couple. We need to be a couple together. Like all the things we do need to be couple things. Mm-hmm. And she's just not like that. So I think it's like,
you're into watching horrific movies. She's into hanging out in lobbies. You know,
well, one of her favorite movies is this movie called Soap Dish, which is Robert Downey Jr. in his pre-Iron Man career. And there's a line in that movie where one of the characters says, you know, that the kind of thing they're looking for, they want something that's peppy and cheap. They want something peppy and cheap. Peppy and cheap. So she'll always say, like, peppy and cheap. And when we're going to go see something, she's like, is this peppy and cheap? And Climax is
the
not...
Answer is always no.
although most recently, you know, she's been saying like the Marvel films are kind of peppy and cheap. They're not cheap, obviously, but they do feel a little inconsequential. They feel very peppy at least, right?
Sure. And the Marvel was indeed very peppy. Yes.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. So it's kind of like that's. It's not like never do these things coincide, Jeffrey, but they don't coincide a lot of the time. So
I would just like to point out that living separate lives is all well and good until you ride share, and then and then you're sitting in the lobby for an hour. I just feel my heart goes out to her.
You know,
gazing over at the popcorn machine and watching the person fill it, and then. And then maybe getting up and walking over to the water fountain and getting some water for herself. And then, you know, it's just like looking at her watch and going, that another 45 minutes of this.
Well, a few things. First of all, we all have smartphones now, Jeff. So no one's ever bored. Okay. I just want to put that out there. But the second thing is,
she's really candy crushing it.
Right. Or something, some version of it. That's right. So. And then the second thing is that, the way it played out, I'll just tell you the way it played out. We got 40 minutes into this movie, and then she just, like 30 minutes in, something bad happens, and she's like, if this continues in this way, I think I'm out of here. And then something else bad happened at the 40-minute mark or so, and then she turns to me, she's like, I'm sorry, I have to go.
Yeah. You guys need a safe word for these... couple journeys.
I will say the other movie that she walked out of that we went to see together was Green Room, the Jeremy Saulnier movie.
Oh yeah.
And right about the part when someone gets their stomach cut open, was when she was like, okay, peace out, I'll wait for you in the lobby. But I think it's like if it had been in the first 8 minutes, 10 minutes or whatever, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's fine, like let's I will leave with you. This night is shot. I will come back to the theater at a separate time and watch this movie then.
She should turn those moments into like a show or something. Just like walking out. Okay, so my husband went to see this movie. It's about these white supremacists in a band. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. So, but I'm just saying, I'm just letting you know that if it was in the first like few minutes, maybe even 15 minutes, I'd be like, okay, that's cool. Let's try to salvage this evening. Let's go find a place to get dinner or something. But like 40 minutes in, guys, come on.
I mean, you should have like a red flag list, Dave, and Gaspar Noé is at the top of that list.
Let me also put this out there. I sent her three movies, right? I said to her, hey, wow, the Seattle Film Festival, like they run movies. They have a theater called the SIF Uptown and SIF Egyptian, Seattle International Film Festival. And they were playing a lot of good movies this weekend. The new Asghar Farhadi movie. The Florian von Donnersmarck movie, right? The foreign film that was nominated for best foreign film. I sent her these movies. I said, hey, I'm interested in seeing some combination of these movies this weekend. Let me know which one you're interested in. She chose Climax. She watched the trailers for all three of them. She chose Climax. So I think just it's I'm not just like taking her to this movie, you know, completely without her knowing anything about it. So,
but you know who Gaspar Noé is.
Yes. Yes.
You
I
know
do.
What he can do. So
I like to conceptualize the inverse of this moment where Dave is forced to get up and leave, and you're like, you made it through 30 minutes of A Dog's Way Home, but it's just too peppy and cheap for you, and you're out, you know?
Yeah, it's possible. Anyway, I do think the peppy and cheap grading rubric is a useful one for people. I think there's a lot of people in the world who like peppy and cheap movies, and so it's nothing wrong with
peppy and cheap.
Nothing wrong. Yeah. It's encouraged me to expand my horizons beyond what I currently am interested in because none of it is peppy and cheap. So
right.
So anyway,
for every Lars von Trier movie, you get to see, I don't know, an early rom com or something.
Yeah,
there's a lot.
Something like that. So okay. Oh. So you guys kind of derailed me a little bit, but I'll just say that the thing I liked about Climax is it has many of Gaspar Noé's hallmarks, including like a really thumping bass line. I know that sounds weird to say, but like if you see like Enter the Void, like one of the best things about that movie is the way it uses music. There's just this ambient thrum of the bass that's going on like for virtually the entire film.
That would honestly be a good movie to see in the theater with like a transducer in the seat so that you're getting shook with the movie too or something.
It's just a very like reassuring kind of like
you're getting
like,
shook while you're getting shook.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right. Yeah. It's
that's
really
his
cool.
next movie. It's just shook.
Have you guys ever seen that documentary called Rise about crumping? The dance?
Oh, I have actually.
Yes.
Yeah, so apparently Gaspar Noé was inspired to make Climax after he saw that Rise movie. because like he's so impressed with the dancing in that movie. So it was the David LaChapelle documentary. And there's a lot of like that style of dancing in Climax. And it's actually really impressive because a lot of the quote-unquote actors are actually dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very good at it, so it's actually really interesting to see visually. Like it's a very interesting movie. So I really enjoyed it. I'd recommend it if you want to be provoked, if you want to be upset. Then I think Climax by Gaspar Noé is a good choice. So
or just visit Twitter.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been watching this week. Jeff, what have you watched this week?
I have been enjoying the new show on Netflix. I don't know if it's a new show or if it's just new to Netflix. I think it's one of those.
You never know anymore. You never know anymore.
Called Working Moms. This is the brainchild of Katherine Reitman. And I should note, just for disclosure, that a few years ago I became pretty friendly with Katherine Reitman. And she helped me out on my Kickstarter and did some things. I haven't talked to her in a long time. But I was sort of inclined to like something that she made, and I like this very much. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But I think it's fun. It's right in the wheelhouse for something my wife and I can enjoy together.
It looks peppy and cheap from the.
It is indeed. Yeah. It is. I think that's could be perceived as a pejorative from her perspective, from Katherine Reitman's perspective, but I wouldn't use it as such. I think it is peppy and cheap in all the right ways. It also, I think, is about some real stuff. Like it doesn't shy away from, you know, there's a big postpartum depression angle that the show handles. I mean, it's a comedy. It's a half hour comedy, a Canadian half hour comedy about new moms who are going back to work after what is just a glorious amount of maternity leave because it's a set in Canada. My wife was like, what? They haven't been working for 6 months. What? But it is definitely in our wheelhouse of talking about things that we have gone through and are going through about ambitious, capable, smart women who are trying to balance the impossible, which is, you know, be the perfect mom and also be present in their working lives. But I think it does that with a level of self-deprecation and humor and fun and cleverness and brings out some. I mean, there are certain things you've seen a million times with that trope, but it I think, mines some new ground and does some things in really smart ways. And I mean, it's amazing. It's Katherine Reitman, right? She's Ivan Reitman's daughter. So her dad is played by Dan Aykroyd, which I was like, oh wow, Dan Aykroyd. So I don't know. It was I enjoy it. It's light. It's, you know, peppy and cheap, but it is, I think it's fun. And especially if you have kids or have, you know, recently had kids or are sort of going through that as well, I think you'll find a lot of joy in it.
Very cool. The show is Working Moms. It's on Netflix right now. And yeah, I did not mean to be pejorative in the peppy and cheap. I actually consider it to be a compliment. But by the way, I do want to quote the line from Soap Dish in which this phrase first appears. A character named Edmund Edwards says the following, quote, "I would like to voice my strong concern about this show's spiraling decline in ratings. David, ever since you took us to the Caribbean, it's been Jamaican homeless people sucking soup and a big wave outside that cost $100,000. That's depressing and it's expensive. Two words I hate. You know the words I like? I like the word peppy and the word cheap. Peppy and cheap," end quote. Anyway, just wanted to give that Soap Dish movie another shout out. glad you're enjoying Working Moms on Netflix. And Devendra, what have you been watching this week?
Oh yeah, quickly, my thoughts on Captain Marvel. I did listen to your review, guys, and I mostly agree with you all. It feels like mid-tier Marvel for me. One thing I'm surprised you didn't bring up, though, is the idea of this movie. It's another Marvel thing that's kind of dealing with colonialism and refugees in particular. Oh, like, yeah. It is a refugee crisis movie. And I found that to be really interesting too, like following along Thor Ragnarok and everything, like, and even Black Panther, like these are movies dealing with colonialism in pop culture ways. And I, you know, that's kind of interesting.
I thought I brought that up when I was talking about the anti-imperialist message, but I guess I didn't make that clear enough. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that I think it's no accident that one of the characters calls Earth a shithole at one point in the movie, which is same phrase that Donald Trump used to describe countries of that he wasn't a fan of. So anyway, I agree that it is that, but I also think that the rah-rah, you know, the U.S. military is great, kind of is a weird.
I honestly did not take a lot of that out of the movie. So that's like it. this is an anti-war movie at the end of the day, Dave. Like.
I don't think the U.S. Air Force sees it that way, but okay, anyway. It doesn't matter
what the U.S. Air Force says. Like, the movie, the text, is like, clearly, we've created something to end war. What message are we taking away from that, you know?
I kind of feel like jokes on them, you know, jokes on the Air Force.
Exactly. They do not get, they're being trolled right now, and they don't get it, but fine, they'll go along with it, I guess. But I see what you're saying. I see you raising the point about it. Maybe that's a bigger point around something like Triple Frontier that we'll talk about later. Yeah,
fair enough. Okay, cool. Anything else you want to talk about? Or
I've also been watching Black Earth Rising, the Netflix series that launched a couple of months ago, and this is a show by Hugo Blick, and he is an English actor and writer and director. He did The Honorable Women several years ago, starring Maggie Gyllenhaal, and I loved that miniseries. And this one, I've been really looking forward to it because it stars Michaela Cole. From Chewing Gum, and, you know, tremendous comedic actor, but this show really forces her to use her dramatic chops. Also has John Goodman and a great slew of people you'd recognize from a lot of British shows. And this is a political thriller, and it's really interesting too because it's basically revolving around the aftermath of the Rwandan genocide. And Michaela Cole plays a child who was adopted, who miraculously survived the slaughter and was adopted by a British family and is dealing with that identity crisis. But the show also goes back and is dealing with, like, I think the guilt of the people who survived, and also like the people and countries and, you know, governments that could have helped and probably didn't. It's kind of using all that around a decent, like, conspiracy thriller format as well. There's a lot of stuff it doesn't do that's quite new, but this is just like a genre I really enjoy, and I love Michaela Cole, and John Goodman is here too as her sort of like father figure, trying to help her figure out the mystery. It's all very good. I'm surprised more people aren't talking about this show, because it does feel like the sort of thing people would be binging on Netflix and talking about the twists and turns right after. But for some reason, I don't know, it seems to be getting pretty ignored. So check
it
out.
I haven't heard anybody talking about it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think you'd appreciate it, Jeff, just for John Goodman too. And Hugo Blick, by the way, like I think I just love the way this guy constructs stories. But as an actor, I didn't even realize like he was in Tim Burton's Batman. He was Jack Napier. The guy who's like, have you ever danced in the pale moonlight? That was him. Yeah. So that's a little fun tidbit. But he seems to be having a great career as a writer, producer, and actor as well now.
Very cool. The show is Black Earth Rising, and it's on Netflix right now. And Devinder, how far into it are you?
I'm about halfway through. It's really good. It's really intense.
Very cool. That's what we've been watching this week. Before we get to our review of Triple Frontier, we got to thank all the people who donated to this podcast. Big thanks to Stephen Garrity from Prince Edward Island, Canada, who says, every time Jeff says, well, Dave, before a limerick, I become a little bit more likely to make a donation to the Slash Filmcast. And also this donation from Susan Monk, who writes, if you won't eat a mountain of meat or go to a movie that's not across the street, let me provide aid. Your ride will not be delayed. Hope the next film makes your heart skip a beat, but not the bad way requiring a trip to the ER. So thanks for that, Susan. I mean, really appreciate the donation. Nothing I'm about to say should be interpreted as being against the donation. But Jeff, I really feel like you're a bad influence on our listeners, not because of the limericks, but because just this limerick meter, man. It's loose at best is what I would describe it as.
I understand how a limerick is supposed to work. That said, you're really going to hate me this week.
Okay. And then a big thanks to new subscribers, Mitchell Ringenberg, Matthew Richards, Andy from Scalpel for Hire Vet Services, and Hebo Yusuf, Yusuf. Thank you so much for your contributions at the rate of a few dollars per month. If you want to support the Slash Filmcast financially, you can always go to paypal.me/filmcast. That's paypal.me/filmcast. You can also go to slashfilm.com, use the Slash Filmcast tab, and the PayPal links on the side of the page. Please do not donate if it in any way causes you hardship in your life. But if you do want to support us and help us to maintain the show, help us defray the cost of seeing movies and putting on this podcast for you, we'd really appreciate it. Let's move on to our review of Triple Frontier.
First things first. Any man here that wants to walk away can do so knowing they're the best of us. But it's got to be now. There is no ground support. The injuries we sustain, we're walking out with. Make no mistake about it. You guys need to own the fact that we do not have the flag on our shoulders. You cannot go back to your normal life after tonight.
Everything we've done for the last 17 years, with nothing to show for it.
You've been shot 5 times for your country, and you can't even afford to send your kids to college.
If we had accomplished half the things that we've accomplished in any other profession, we'd be set for life.
I'm your masters of war.
The question is, do we finally get to use our skills for our own benefit?
We're going to get Gabriel Martin Larea.
He's got over $75 million in cash.
If we're not gone forever after you make your move, we are dead.
That was from the trailer for Triple Frontier, the newest film by J.C. Shandor. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. 5 ex-Special Forces soldiers plan to rob a cocaine cartel boss of all his cash at his house in the Amazon jungle area of the triple borders, Peru, Brazil, and Colombia. Which, by the way, reading that description is how I realized what the movie...
I understood the title.
Now I understand what the title is. They do not make that clear in the film at all, as far as I
know.
The talent behind this movie is incredible.
It's astonishing.
You have J.C. Shandor, who is the director of... critically acclaimed films, not necessarily huge hits, but critically acclaimed films, including A Most Violent Year and All Is Lost.
All Is Lost is unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Brilliant film. One of the best films of that year. You got Mark Boll, who is a frequent collaborator with Kathryn Bigelow, who I think is an executive producer on this film.
She is, yes.
Yeah. Mark Boal, the writer of Zero Dark Thirty, The Hurt Locker, Detroit, In the Valley of Elah, super talented person. I think, didn't he also help out with like the second season of Serial as well? Anyway, he really prolific person who's like has dealt with kind of cinema and stories that take place in realistic environments, right? That like he understands deeply the experiences of the people who have been in these situations, like the ones depicted in Triple Frontier. You have actors like Academy Award winner Ben Affleck. You got Oscar Isaac, Charlie Hunnam, Garrett Hedlund, mm-hmm. Pedro Pascal.
Ben Affleck, by the way, who's like maybe third in the cast list, which is kind of surprising to me. So, yeah.
I mean, just the talent behind this movie is amazing. And so with all that pedigree, Devendra Hardwar, do you think this movie lived up to it?
I mean, I really enjoyed it. It does feel like kind of a maybe a dry run for a deeper concept. But yeah, this movie, it feels like a Mark Boal movie. It feels like an exploration of military life and its effect on people. And also certainly far campier than any of his other things, because this is a movie that kind of starts off as a look at, like, you know, the impact of doing military service and kind of how, you know, it makes it hard to live a normal life after that. And yeah, a drug raid that feels morally righteous in a way that goes wrong really quickly. I enjoyed it overall. Like there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on here. I love the relationship between all these characters. I think the set pieces are really well done. There's a house raid, and several chases, and even just like a long, grueling,
hiking.
There's a long trek. This movie reminds me a lot of Sorcerer. The Friedkin movie that we reviewed a couple years ago when they re-released it, which is also a movie about a long trek in South America, bringing cargo. This cargo won't explode, but it just like that sensibility of like this being a long, difficult journey, you know, in the pursuit of this singular goal. And is it worth it? It kind of reminded me of that. And also reminded me a lot of like the Coen movies where they just end up being like morality plays at times about like the consumption of greed and kind of what it does to you and what it means and how is it worth it. It kind of works for me in all those respects. You know, I really enjoyed it, but I can certainly see like this is not a perfect movie at all. It's kind of messy. It's kind of jumbled. But as somebody who really likes J.C. Chandor's stuff, I think A Most Violent Year is a masterpiece. Honestly, like I really love that movie. You could see all those sensibilities in here. And this even feels like a weird pseudo sequel to like Margin Call in terms of like what it's actually exploring.
Interesting.
Jeff Cannata, what did you think of this film?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts about Triple Frontier are best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Huh.
And again,
fancy that.
Again, you're going to hate me, but I couldn't help myself.
Too late. Too late.
Okay. You're too late. Still going back now. All right. Here we go. The world now has wars forever. I thought that meant I'd sure never find a film I'd love that reminds me of the oeuvre of Schwarzenegger.
That was
wow.
Truly excruciating.
But I mean it. This is not the kind of movie I'm inclined to enjoy anymore. There was a time in my youth when I could sort of blithely enjoy this kind of bro-y. It's cool to shoot 100 things. I can have fun with Predator and Rambo, and I could like think it's all that's so rad. These guys are badasses, and oh yeah, that's so much fun to watch. The world has ruined that enjoyment for me, or maybe just I've become more aware in my adulthood of the how messy and not fun that all that stuff actually is, and you sort of realize that a level of escapism is not actually enjoyable. It's you know, it's hard for me to enjoy those kinds of films anymore. And they don't make those kinds of films anymore, right? One thing that's kind of amazing about Triple Frontier is that it's not based on anything. It's not a sequel.
I will say, Jeff, they do make a lot of those movies, and they're all made by Peter Berg.
You're right. Peter Berg still makes those movies, and I do not enjoy them most of the time. Fair enough. But you know, this movie is not a superhero film. It's not a sequel. It's not based on anything. It is a straight up action movie that they kind of used to make, you know, that I used to like, and I tend not to anymore. These are bro-y. You know, how cool you are with a gun and how awesome guns are and how rad it is to be highly trained and good with that stuff. You know, just not something I dig anymore. But I loved this movie. I had fun from the word go. That first opening action sequence is amazing. The way this movie is shot is awesome. I mean, there's a shot in the first, I don't know, 10 minutes of this movie where Oscar Isaac shoots a grenade into a building, and it's shot from like over his shoulder. It's amazing. And it's across this street that he shoots. It's just incredible. So I was having fun on a sort of a pure action movie level early on, despite myself. And this movie kind of reminds me of Three Kings, which is a movie I love. And, it's a heist. I love heists. And it's sort of I love movies like Judgment Night, where the best of intentions start going wrong and things go worse. And I love that thing. So
Judgment Night has gotten so much love on this podcast from you, Jeff, which I don't dispute, but I just think like out of any podcast in the world, we probably talk more than Judgment Night, talk about Judgment Night more than anyone else. I think
it's one of my sort of, pillar examples of a type of movie. Uh-huh. I think it is a pure example of that thing, which is like the only plot of Judgment Night is, hey, we all want to go to a part. We want to go to this cool concert and we can't. Or if it's a fight, actually. But we all want to go to this cool thing and we can't because things start going wrong. And I it's very pure distillation of that thing, which is present in a lot of movies. You know, a simple plan. And there's a lot of examples of movies like that. But there's none more pure than Judgment Night. So you heard it here. On one level, it's the kind of movies I dig in a lot of ways, but also I really admire the fact that this movie starts out as this bro-y action film about how cool it is to be cool, how badass it is to be badass, and you know, and how we're gonna, you know, do this rad heist and get the money, and it becomes a meditation on the value of human life. And it actually grows a conscience in the course of the movie. And I found that to be really well executed. I thought, as Devendra mentioned, the relationships are all, they're all shorthand. They're all bro-y and typical, but I feel like the movie deftly does all that. It doesn't hammer it over your head. It doesn't indulge in the sort of Peter Bergian version of that, which is manipulative, I think. I mean, there's a little of that, but I think it's subtle enough.
I'd say there is a lot of it, but okay. Sorry, Jeff, don't want to interrupt.
It's wrestling, I think, with deeper concepts than what we've seen with a lot of the Peter. Like,
okay.
I'm looking at a movie. I haven't seen what's the latest Mark Wahlberg as historic American soldier one,
Patriots Day,
something.
I think, probably.
No,
Mile 22.
Yeah, Mile 22, which seems like a movie about a group of, like, this movie, except far dumber and, like, far just about the rah-rah nature of it. And I think this movie kind of wrestles both things, because it is about the consequences of your actions and not just going in and blowing up a town or something.
Yeah, I think you're right, Devendra. I would put this in the category of, oh my gosh, if you do the kinds of movies I don't like well enough, smartly enough, I can like them. And I found myself really enjoying this movie. I found it tense and riveting. I was in it with these guys. When things start going bad, I was on the edge of my seat. I put myself in that situation. What would I do? How would I go? We'll talk about more in spoilers, but I really, really liked this movie a lot.
So are you familiar with the walk hard problem, right, that movies have, right? Which is that I've seen a lot of critics talk about
this. I know where
you're
going with this, Dave.
I've seen a lot
of
critics talk about this, which is basically that after they watched Walk Hard, it is almost impossible to enjoy musical biopics anymore.
Yes.
Because Walk Hard does such a good job of skewering every cliche from those movies. Mm-hmm. And what's remarkable is that we almost had a musical biopic that was made of the kind that was made fun of by Walk Hard win Best Picture this year, which is Bohemian Rhapsody, a movie that follows the Walk Hard formula almost exactly. And that is unfortunate because musical biopics have kind of had the same formula for decades. And we really need to learn from that and
be
better.
Are you going to reference a classic movie that begins with M, David?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
I'm ready.
And
for
so
this.
For me, the Walk Hard issue is present in this movie, right?
Definitely.
Because the analogy, SAT analogy goes, and I know there's a lot of actors' children out there who won't understand this, but the SAT analogy goes.
Oh, brutal.
The SAT
they
analogy
can't hear
goes,
you over their money, by the way, so it doesn't matter.
The SAT analogy goes, Walk Hard is to Bohemian Rhapsody as MacGruber is to Triple Frontier. Right?
They do the MacGruber recruiting sequence.
They do the MacGruber recruiting sequence. It is in this movie.
Yeah. I need a pilot. Head nod. Yeah. Rock music in the background. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I don't think this movie is great. I just have to say...
Are you judging it just on that and not...
No. I think that it's just not... It's not that good. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's terrible because just with the sheer acting talent involved, with the sheer talent of the people involved, you can't like it has to have at least some level of competence. And I agree that the action scenes are pretty good, and a lot of the acting is pretty good.
Made for you, Dave. Like I know you enjoy this sort of like action thing. Like this movie also feels like Oscar Isaac's tryout for Metal Gear Solid. Basically, like this is him and Solid Snake, and it's glorious.
I'll buy it. Yes, have some.
Yeah,
but I think it's merely okay to good, and certainly not great. I think there are a lot of problems with this movie. One of them is the adherence to extremely cliche formulas and adding nothing to them and arguably doing them worse than other films. I mean, you guys, this is a fact that Criterion Collection does not like to admit. But are you aware that Michael Bay's Armageddon and The Rock are in the Criterion Collection?
Because you own them.
I own them. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And in the essay, like each one of these movies has like an essay, like a Criterion essay associated with it. And I'm gonna read to you
the essay from Armageddon is just USA, USA, USA.
Film professor Janine Basinger wrote this following description of Armageddon in the Armageddon Criterion essay. She writes, quote, "Armageddon is not for the faint-hearted, the slow-witted, or the dim-eyed. Consider how the film explains.
True.
Consider how the film explains what Harry Stamper's vacationing crew is doing when he sends out the word he needs them. In little more than 1 minute of screen time, five key characters are identified, established in a specific environment, shown relating to others, given distinct personalities, and defined in ways that indicate how they will behave in the later mission. If that's not screenwriting, what is?"
Indeed.
But why? You're bringing that up, Dave, except I think this movie actually does do, even though
it does a shittier version of what I just said.
I don't
disagree 100%.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah. I actually really like all the character introductions we got. Like when it is the MacGruber thing. It's like he approaches Ben Affleck's like, "I need you for a job," but then it goes into like, "Oh, his life is shitty." And he's selling condos because he can't do anything else after being a soldier and giving his life to the country, and has like a fractured relationship with his daughter. Like in that short sequence, you get so much about this guy's life.
I think the Ben Affleck character is like that introduction is decent.
But I like the way they introduce like the Garrett Hedlund character too. Which is just like, all of a sudden we're behind, you know, we're in the training room. We're in the you know, what do you call it? Like the, where you're getting ready for a fighting match. And all of a sudden, like, Garrett Hedlund's just like, he's in the zone. He can't even like really think about this. Like he is, you see him as a focus guy. He's like, oh yeah. Okay. You want to do this mission? Cool. But my head is in this giant fight right now.
Well, it's also funny because everybody else thinks what he's doing is dumb. Yeah. And he's like, no, it's fight night. It's fight night. Yeah, pal. All right, it's fine. And yeah. it looks like he gets the crap kicked out of him. Right?
The shot is awesome. Getting punched. Cut away.
Yeah. I thought it was all clever and fun and shorthand and done deftly. I mean, yes, it's getting the band together. You have to do that. It feels like you're mad that it's a trope, not that this movie does it, but that it has to be done in these kinds of movies. And I felt like, yeah, it has to be done, but this movie does it well. It does it competently and smartly. It doesn't insult my intelligence.
If like, this is something I could see Soderbergh sitting down and be like, okay, we're going to reinvent the group getting together dynamic. I'm going to edit here and here and here. I'm going to go back in time. I'm going to like just really reinvent how this works. This doesn't change that formula, but it still kind of works for what the movie needs.
I just need to be really clear. I'm not mad at it for being a trope. I'm not mad that this is a common thing. I'm mad that the movie, in my opinion, in my estimation, didn't do a particularly good job of it, because I think these characters are so thinly drawn and have so little personality that it's hard to root for them. It's hard to see any kind of growth in them at all during the course of the movie, because you know so little about them. So that's my beef. It's not that it's a common thing. It's that I actually think Armageddon did this exact thing better than this film, which is a rough statement to say about a movie. So anyway.
I would say everyone has distinct personalities. Like the thing is, the movie doesn't spend much time with each character, but the introductions, like we start with Charlie Hunnam's character giving the speech in front of like a group of recruits saying, don't do what I did. You know, don't sell yourself out. I think after you do your service, like, which is a thing, right? Because America and all these countries train soldiers. And once they're done fighting, then all these private companies can come and like enlist them for whatever the hell they want. And most of the time it's not great. And seeing him kind of reckon with that too, I found was fascinating. And by the end of the movie, it sort of kills him to do this thing. Then he seems to have, we'll talk about this in spoilers, I guess.
Let's just wait till spoilers before we get to the growth.
There's growth and there's changes, especially with Ben Affleck's character too. Like I think once money gets involved, like things change in ways that I find really realistic and interesting.
Okay, well, I'm surprised that you guys like this movie that much, but it's cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I will say that, did you guys see this article that came out a year ago called The Great Sadness of Ben Affleck in the New Yorker?
And is the result of that, yes.
I'm not going to read from the article, but basically it's the summary of it is that Ben Affleck has been photographed like numerous times looking sad. Right. And certainly separated from Jennifer Garner in like 2016 and is no longer playing Batman after
he went through rehab. Like there's a lot of stuff.
Very long protracted like Batman situation too. Like it was speculated since Justice League that he wouldn't be doing Batman. He finally came out and said it publicly recently. And I got to say that was a great character introduction, because when Ben Affleck is shown selling condos, I had a split second. Yeah. I had this thought in my head like, oh, my gosh, is Ben Affleck OK? You know, like I actually thought that this was about Ben Affleck and not a character he was playing.
Yeah. I mean, 5 years ago, Dave, 5 years ago, this movie would star Ben Affleck. He would be the Oscar Isaac character. Yeah. And now he's relegated to being like the kind of like washed up guy who used to be a great soldier. There's a lot you could read into here. Yeah.
Anyway, so I thought it was only OK to good. And I think that the great themes that you guys are discussing are pretty mixed at best in terms of how they're conveyed in the movie. So,
well, Dave, if you want to talk about change, this movie starts with Metallica and gets to Bob Dylan. If that's not change,
I
don't know what is.
Yeah. That's change.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I also have to say, like, I thought the score, which was composed by Disasterpiece, I think, was pretty generic. Like,
some of his stuff rolls over the credits and it's just like, oh, this is just like bro 90s grunge.
Yeah, it's like I felt like I could buy it on a stock music website. Which
but the movie has great music cues outside of that.
Yeah, it does.
Agreed. Okay, so I only thought it was okay to decent. You guys thought it was very good.
J.C. Chandler's career has mostly been going, right? Like, there was always a split over his movies. I didn't really like Margin Call, but I also know most people didn't appreciate Most Violent Year as much as I did.
I love Most Violent... You know, Devendra, you and I are in agreement. I love Most Violent Year. Hated Margin Call.
Yeah.
This movie isn't as bad as Margin Call, but it falls more on that side of the line for me. So,
didn't we review All Is Lost and just, like, how All Is Lost movie just... It's so much
amazing. Let's all go back to talking about All Is Lost instead, which is a movie that we all can enjoy. But anyway,
I mean, All Is Lost is superior to this movie. I'm not going to argue that, but this movie, I don't know. It's more fun than it is good for me. I think that maybe, you know, it is a little formulaic, and you know, I think it bothered you more than it bothered me because I was just having such a good time and in it so hard.
All right, let's get to spoilers for Triple Frontier starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're gonna see this coming?
No.
But you won't find it because, of course,
you're not gonna see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret.
You want to be fooled.
You know this operation, what they're dealing, or what they're setting up, is not gonna go right. And what goes wrong is actually it goes too well. And the problem isn't that all of a sudden the guys appear and they're in a big firefight. The problem is there's too much money. There's more than they planned. So
I think that was very interesting. And in fact, that there is a did you guys ever see Way of the Gun?
Yeah. Right?
The Christopher McQuarrie movie.
Yeah.
In Way of the Gun, like, Christopher McQuarrie was talking about how Benicio del Toro is in that movie, and on set he had asked the question, like, how much I don't remember how many millions of dollars he's carrying. He's like 2 million or 5 million. It's like, how much does like X million dollars weigh? And Christopher McQuarrie is like, I don't know. Who gives a crap? And he's like, well, I'm the one who's going to be carrying it, so I give a crap. Like, please tell
me. And Widows answered that too, by the way.
Right, like, exactly. Widows.
We're paying attention to that now.
But it's basically that, like, they did research, and apparently it would weigh a crap ton, I think is the technical term. And so, like, that informed how the rest of that movie was structured. Because it was a significant part of it was about getting, like, carrying that money. And I did think it was very interesting that a significant part of this movie deals with carrying money as a plot mechanic.
And it constantly, you know, things are going to start going wrong, right? Yeah. That's kind of the movie we're in, but it constantly subverts your expectation of what's going to go wrong. Like Devendra's talking about, you assume that, oh my God, they're going to get greedy and they're staying in the house too long. And he does the whole thing, like, give us 15 extra minutes. And you go, oh, the shit show is going to start here in the house. No, it doesn't really. And then you go, oh, here's the moment where the rinkety dink plane comes in.
Right,
and they got to figure out a way to use the rinkety dink plane. I've seen that a million times. No, we get this badass helicopter, and that's not the problem. It's like, it's smart, dude. The movie's smart. It constantly is toying with that stuff, I think.
And the problem is always too much, right? We have too much money, too much weight. And then you're left to reckon with, like, what is the cost of this? And, like, what, you know, it's really them balancing their greed, right? And it also all starts with the Ben Affleck character. And you start to see immediately, like, how desperate he is. As a person, I guess, too, like, once he sees the extra money, he is, like, gung ho in, like, getting as much of it as they can. And that's the beginning of the disaster.
Exactly. It's their own greed. And the journey of the movie, the change in the characters that you said you don't see, is in realizing that human life is more important than their greed. Right. Yeah. It is coming to terms with the fact that they should never have done this, that the people that they've murdered in their lives are human beings, that you can't just treat people like that, and that getting this body home is more important than money. And the final turn of the film is, we're actually not even going to take the money. We have to give it all to this family because the life is more valuable and could never be repaid.
So in the Slack Filmcast, in the Triple Frontier spoiler channel, Max from the Slack Filmcast wrote the following, which basically mirrors my thoughts exactly on the ending of this film. He says, "The film gives the survivors a big moment where they donate their remaining shares of money to Affleck's family. It's an odd scene as it plays out as if they are commemorating the sacrifice of their friend when he died due to his own avarice. It makes it doubly odd that he's the only character that actually ends up with money, but okay, I can buy this as a darkly ironic moment and can buy that these characters might do this. What really bothers me is that after the film has plainly established how dirty this money is and how these guys chose to bring Affleck's body back over saving any more money, Hunnam offers Isaac the coordinates of the money with an insinuation that they should grab it someday. They carted that money through the mountains, losing one of their own, only to realize that they had to rid themselves of its weight, literally and figuratively, to survive. And what money they did collect, they didn't keep. So then why does the film present finding the money in such a jovial tone? If you're going to make a moralistic tale, I find it odd to leave on such a note."
Hunnam was not, I never got the sense that he was like, oh, we need to go do this. He's more like, I'm passing on the weight of this guilt to you. You know, like,
wow, that is not at all how I read it. I mean, I didn't think it was jovial is not the word I would use either, but certainly it was kind of like a
yeah, if you like ever want to get around to it.
It's like a badass ending meant to like rev you up. Like, hey, get ready for Triple Frontier 2, you know, like.
No, man, it is like the ending of The Ring. Okay? Like it is, oh, we think this shit's all over, and now all of a sudden like, oh, we could just like clear our conscience. We can like forget about this money forever. And I think it's interesting that, you know, I don't think Charlie Hunnam's character is saying, I need to go get this, because he is the first one to give up the money. Like, he is washing his hands of all of this. But that money is still there. And I think it's interesting. He's just like giving Oscar Isaac the choice. You do with this information what you will. But then it presents to us like, yeah, the curse of this greed is going to continue unless he just gets rid of it.
And
something.
I love
we don't
how
know.
The movie.
We
I
don't
love
know.
How the movie has messy loose ends, right?
Yes.
The only other objective they had was to kill Loria. And he's completely absent from the movie. Like, I love that they constantly have this. Like, why wasn't he there?
Well, he was there.
He was there?
Yeah, they killed him in the panic room, Jeff.
It happened in, like, a minute.
I thought that wasn't him, and I thought Oscar Isaac was lying.
No.
I thought he said he's dead, but he wasn't saying...
It was the same guy the girl approached earlier.
I will say this. I actually had a thought in my head that, like, Oscar Isaac is so obsessed with killing Larea that I almost thought to myself, maybe that's not Larea, and maybe Oscar Isaac is Larea, and like that's his like body double, and like he's gonna kill him to like make it seem like Larea's dead. Like Oscar Isaac is the bad guy somehow.
If this were a 90s, like, yeah,
that would, in my opinion, that would have been a much interesting movie. Instead, it's just bad storytelling, which is like that you have this bad guy who has essentially no introduction, and it's like, hey, it's this lie that these movies tell of like, hey, if we kill this one dude, everything's gonna get a lot better, when we've seen from, like, you know, reality and even fiction like The Wire that's not how it works, right? Like, just because you kill one dude, it doesn't mean that it's gonna solve all the drug problems in this area. And that's the way Oscar Isaac frames it, you know.
But Oscar Isaac says I think somebody told this to him, like, he was there for several years trying to help this country. I don't think they really established which one he's in, but he is there, and you see him. Like, even in that opening sequence where, like, the cops end up just executing the people that they capture, like, he's a part of this, but also, you know, it seems like he's tired of this shit. He actually wants to make a difference. And I think the character believes this will make a difference. Even, of course, we know, based on other movies we've seen and everything, that that's not the case. But I can think, like, a guy who's been there for 2 years and just wants to, like, actually kill, you know, something or do something that'll help the country potentially. Like, I could see him having this goal. This is how they think.
I just disagree. I mean, I think the movie doesn't do a great job of, like, I don't think the movie really does enough to even have a position on the drug war and, like, what the big problems are of the drug war, right? I think the movie's not about that. It nods at that in an extremely simplistic way. But I don't think it's about that. I also think the scene where they're like scoping, they're doing the recce, the quote unquote recce, where they're scoping out the place, was kind of like cringeworthy bad, which is like they're going around and it's like, oh, they just happen to be executing 8 dudes in the backyard today at the moment that they're, it's just so over the top.
I had that thought too.
Come on.
I had that thought. It is a very convenient day that The day that you money arrives is the same day you're doing executions. It's the same day you have your kids playing in the yard.
Yeah,
you
know, it's like, just so bad. It's like it's not great.
I mean, it's a small effect. I think the thing you haven't brought up is
Tell me what I haven't brought up.
Well, you haven't brought up how I think well executed the big set pieces are, how thrilling there are the moments. I mean, the opening set piece, you know, firefight in the city street, or the, you know, the rundown city street, is, I think, really cool. There are several incredible moments. I think there are, you know, there's the big ending Jeep chase. That's really a lot of fun and well done. There is that the moment where they just turn into badasses and they go, okay, call out your kills, go.
Yeah, yeah, and they just, the helicopter crash. It's just
Dude, there are so many just pure cool action beats that you haven't even talked. You're kind of in the weeds about you know, the sort of higher themes of the movie, and it's just an action movie, you know.
I also think the trek itself is interesting too. Like, this movie looks like a nightmare to shoot. Literally, like everything they could have done to make this easy on themselves, like, no, we're gonna take these sacks and just like do a mountain climb, basically, or like shoot in the tundra. It looks like, I can't tell if they're shooting on location, but they're definitely shooting like high up near a similar sort of like mountainside. Like, this does not look like a fun shoot. And you feel it. You feel it in them and how they're kind of falling apart and dealing with everything.
You're talking about the donkey scene, Jeff?
When the donkey eats it, it's come on. Donkey. That was awesome.
Jeff, that was a creature's life, Jeff. That was life.
And that was also a character moment.
You feel it, dude. I'm awesome, not because I'm like, yay, kill the donkey. Awesome because it brings home what's actually going on, and just to see the money and the donkey's life snuffed out in the same moment. And I just thought it was, you know, I love movies where you sort of systematically have to throw away the thing you've wanted your whole life, because that's that's the story of my existence.
Okay, now I'm understanding. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The money, the actual burning money scene, which is just like, fuck it. We're it's better we survive this and burn a couple, you know, million dollars or something, you know, to actually stay warm during the night. There are lots of little bits of this movie I really enjoy, and I think it goes deeper than most movies like this.
And killing Affleck abruptly like that didn't surprise you?
That was good. That was good. I'm like, oh wow, that's a shock. That is one of the maybe two times in this movie. No, probably the only time in this movie I was surprised by anything. Two times. Because I will say, the experience of watching the movie, they're doing the heist 40 minutes into the movie. The heist is starting 40 minutes in, and I'm like, wait, like, what? How is this? What is the rest of the movie? You know, like, if the heist is happening 40 minutes in, and I actually appreciated that they did the heist early on, and the rest of the movie is about how to transport the money. It's interesting approach. So those are the two things I appreciated. How interesting the heist is and moving the money, and also Ben Affleck just getting killed off with no fanfare at all, two thirds of the way through the movie. But I just think, gentlemen, like, yes, the action is fine to good. You know, I there's very little in here that, in my opinion, was great. That I would like, oh, I'm going to go back and rewatch that again. And I'm shocked by your positive reaction, because there's other movies out there that do a better job of covering extremely similar material, like Sicario, I would say, by Denis Villeneuve. That is a much better film.
I love Sicario, but it's not the same. Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather watch Sicario like 10 times than watch this movie again. You know what I mean? Like, this is...
Yeah, but that's Armand Whiting the situation, right? Like, okay. I'm looking at this movie for its merits.
Yeah. Like, okay, no, that's fair enough.
You could compare any movie to a better version of that movie.
You're right.
You
know,
I'm just like, hey, what is this movie offering me? It is offering me, like, these bros, all actors I really like, by the way. I love seeing Pedro Pascal and Oscar Isaac. They're like, just bro it up. Seriously. Like, I will just watch that for a whole season. It tackles these themes in interesting ways. The action's well done. Sicario, as great as it is more of like a slow meditation on the drug war, whereas this is about these dudes in particular. It's just different. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've okay. You know, you're right. I don't want to compare this movie to Sicario, aka a movie I enjoyed much more than this. So we will move on. But I think actually we're towards the end of this conversation, yeah. Which is, I think I've done my level best at convincing you that this movie is not that good, and I have failed abjectly at that, and that's fine. But I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. I think a lot of people will like it, and it's available right now on Netflix. Is Triple Frontier? That's our review of it. So. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week. In the meantime, you can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. You can also email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our music comes from adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. Until next week, where can people find more of your work on the internet? Jeff Cannata.
I think we're overlooking the fact that I came up with two rhymes for Schwarzenegger. All right. Well done. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T.
I think approximate rhymes is a better yeah. term for
I mean,
what you did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm working with Schwarzenegger here.
You're right. You're right. I mean, it's like Schwarzenegger is like the free solo of limerick rhymes.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Thank you for recognizing that. Yes.
It's like the most insane challenge.
Yes. I looked at the mountain and I climbed it.
Yeah.
No harness. I went for it.
Yeah.
Did I fall? Maybe.
In this analogy, you didn't make it to the top. But anyway.
So I also have another podcast where I talk about video games called DLC. The Division 2, which comes out this week, makes a great pairing with Triple Frontier. So, listen to that. DLC, you can find wherever you find podcasts or at 5by5.tv/DLC.
How about you, Devendra?
Oh, I'm at Devendra on Twitter. I write about techandgadget.com, and I've also been at South by Southwest for the past week. So check out some of my coverage there. Some movies I didn't get a chance to talk about here, but maybe I'll bring up later. And also, I'm doing a tech podcast at nomoretech.net. That's no with a K.
Find all my stuff at daveshen.net. And I'm doing another podcast called Write Along at writealongpodcast.com. That's W-R-I-T-E alongpodcast.com. Next week, we will be discussing the new Jordan Peele horror film, Us. One of our most anticipated films of the year. Should be a fun discussion. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later. We watch the movies, flicks, tracks for the good, side bad. It's the Slash Filmcast. For all the news and the movies coming out, because you know that it's the thing worth talking about.
Mark Ronson with his incredible new album, Late Night Feelings. Featuring the hit singles, Late Night Feelings and Nothing Breaks Like a Heart. Mark Ronson, Late Night Feelings, out Friday.